No, the parenthesis here you will not find in the text of the Ein Yaakov. My late professor, Rabbi Shaul Lieberman, said that in reality, the original Ein Yaakov had a text which at times was not exactly in agreement, you know, with the text that we have in the Gemara as it is today. But afterwards, somebody came around and he changed the wording in the Ein Yaakov so it should correspond exactly to it.
He didn't which, right.
Yeah. So
there's so many changes.
Yeah,
not changes,
right.
But the
changes did take place.
The
right.
Scribes made their own decision.
Exactly. Yeah. So to a certain extent, you know, he felt it was a loss because we would have seen a more original text had they not shepherded, you know, with the text of it. All right. Anyway, what does it say over here? It says not only did the Rebbeinu Shalom, in other words, you know, put aside all the other mountains and shows Mount Sinai. But also it says Vehiniach called Ilonos Toves Vehishosh Kenos Baser. A similar idea that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam did not, you know, choose for his revelation to Moshe Rabbeinu, choose, let's say, all kinds of beautiful trees, but rather, what did he choose? He chose, as we would say, the lowly
Star
bush,
yeah.
Right? The snap. Okay. This is what he chose in order to have his Shekhinah, his divine presence, appear unto Moshe Rabbeinu. Yeah. So again, it proves what? The importance of humility. If the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, in giving the Torah, chose Mount Sinai, which was a lowly mountain among all the tall mountains, or the Sneh, the burning bush, which was, after all, a bush and not a lofty, beautiful tree, then we see the importance of humility.
Really don't know, but they claimed to be Mount Sinai, whereas this was Mount
Sinai. Oh, that's a different story. Yeah, I know that. I mean, but we're not worried about that over here in the text. No, what Arthur is saying is that they don't really know the exact location of Mount Sinai, since you have all kinds of hills in the general area over there. So it could be this one, could be another one, or something like that. But they still try to figure out, you know, which one it might be. But one theory is that what is now called Mount Sinai is not necessarily the original Mount Sinai. That's all. There is a monastery on top, I know. Yeah.
Yeah. Also, there's really no Kedusha attached to Mount Sinai.
Yeah, well, that's another story. That's true. The Kedusha is there, it's Israel. The Kedusha is no longer Mount Sinai. Yeah.
It's one time.
Right,
there.
Right.
Yeah,
yeah,
because they had the, you know, they gave the Torah,
right.
Kedusha.
Yeah.
That was a one time affair.
Yeah. Well, it was, exactly. Yeah, that's true. Okay. Omer Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar said, "Kol Adam sheyesh begasis ruach ra'u legadol kasheva." Says any man who has such haughtiness in him deserves, he says, to be cut down even like a grove. Now you know that in the Torah, the Asherah first of all was a grove which was sacred to the Avodah Zarah. Okay.
Yeah.
And therefore the Torah has various injunctions against the Asherah, because people were worshipping over there, and therefore it says, you know, that it's to be cut down. How do we find that? We have a pasuk, it says in Yeshayahu, which says, "V'romei ha'koymo giduyim," meaning that those trees that are tall in stature will be cut down. Okay?
Cut down or uprooted?
Well, geduyim actually would be like cut.
Cut down.
Cut down, yeah. Yeah. I wanted to say uprooted would be yeyokru and ekarim or something like that, right? Yeah.
Why does he quote, I mean, it says right here afterwards also.
And then it says, right, don't say it, but then the pasuk says, right.
Why does he quote from Yeshayahu? Quote from the Chumash first.
No, no, that's all right. Because he wants to say, v'romei akomei geduyim, they will be cut. And why? Because Ksiv Hosam in the Torah says, v'asherehim tegadein, you have to cut down these Asherah, right? Sorry. These groves. So that's why they are what? They are Ramea Kamor Geduyim. I agree with you that if you want to say, you know, let's say chronologically, that the Torah quote should have preceded the one for Yeshayahu.
Sure.
But when it comes to a drash, it's a love dafka. I mean, they could, after all, a drash is a drash. As I pointed out last week, you know. that there are different ways to interpret, and each one comes along with an interpretation. So a drash is to be understood in its own terms, but it's not halacha, which is one thing, you know, that we stress, that you know, halacha is that you have to do this, that, and the other thing, but a drash is to teach us the way to live, the way of life, exactly. Okay. Okay. The Yomar Rabbi Elazar, another statement of Rabbi Elazar, it says, "Kol olam sheyesh bo gasus ruach," right? Any person in whom there is haughtiness, so he says, "Ein aforo ninar." Literally, his dust is not going to be shaken. Now, what does it mean? Actually, it means, in other words, when the time of Tchias HaMesim comes, he's going to stay put. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, and it's a famous pasuk in Yeshayahu, it says, "Hokitzu berananu shochnei opar," which means, wake up and sing, literally, right? Those of you who dwell in the dust. In other words, those of you who are mason or dead. And it says, shochvei be'ofar lo ne'emar. In other words, those who lie in the dust. This is, it doesn't say that. Ela shochnei ofar. What does it mean? Those who dwell. What is the difference between them? Between those who dwell and those who are simply lying in the garden. So the answer is, the shochnei ofar, they are mi shenaso shochein la'ofar b'chayav. Those who are literally neighbors, in other words, those who stay close to the ground in their own lifetime. In other words, they are the humble, right, and not the gasei haruach. Okay, let's take a look at Rashi, and then we continue. Okay. Okay. Yes, Ninari says, what is Ninari says? Mekitz, right? Wakes up, bitchias amesim. Shoichvei be'ofor lo ne'emar, the dishtaba that we would learn, al kol amesim, meaning that all of them who are lying in the earth right now, who are dead, will wake up, you know, for resurrection. But rather, who is going to be singled out? It would be shochin le'ofor. In other words, mashpi latzmon le'ofor. He lowers himself so that he's like the dust. Okay, we continue. The Amar Rabbi Elazar, another teacher of Rabbi Elazar, he says, "Kol olam sheyesh bo gasus haruach." Any person who has gasus haruach, who has, you know, haughtiness, he says, "Shechina miyaleh l'salav." The Shechina itself, literally, laments. It's about the best translation over here. Laments concerning him. In other words, the Shechina is very unhappy with his conduct, and there's a burst forth into lamentation. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, "Vegavoa memerchok ye'eda," which means, and the one who is on high, right, he sees from afar. Of course, that's not the original meaning of it, but the drash is what. So this is what we'll see again in the Rashi. He says, "V'gavoa mimerchok yeda." He says, "Reishe dekro." At the beginning of the pasuk, it says, "Ki rom ad Hashem v'shafol yireh." Right, that the Lord is on high, and He will see the one who is humble, the gavoa, and also the one who is haughty. The hagavoa, when it comes to the one who is humble, and this is not Yeshayahu now, I mean, that was the end of the pasuk over there, but the Rashi is explaining, Agavah, the person who is haughty, he says, "Mimerchok," from afar yet, "Mekodem shetavu alo puronus, yomim rabim, yeida shchino," right? The Shchina knows in advance already that, you know, he's going to come to the end of his life, and he's going to be punished. And so Shekhinah miseinenis mishtaberis olovens, and the Shekhinah laments and literally breaks itself. In other words, it has a broken heart concerning this person, right? Kimo the Yeda Almanoisov, or the Yevoda Behem Anshei Sukos, or Yevoda Kimevi Lamala Lishon Shovar. And those Pesukim, says Rashi, the idea of Yoda means not no, but rather in the sense to be punished. Okay, So in other words, the Gavoah b'Me'achok Yeda would mean that the Rebbeinu Shalalam is going to punish whoever is Gavoah, and the punishment already is known, is anticipated, by the Shechinah. Dorish Rav Adeira, the Itaibah Rabbi Eloza, Rabbi Avira gives another drash, but there are those who say that it wasn't Rabbi Avira, but it was Rabbi Eloza. It says, Bo Ure, come and see that Shalom Kemidas HaKadosh Baruch Hu Minas Basu Adam, that the human being's qualities or attributes are not like the Rebbeinu Shalalam's. Midas Basu Adam, the quality of a human being, or the character of a human being, is that Gavoa Roe Es HaGavoa V'Ein Gavoa Roe Es HaShofo, that the one who is on top sees only those who are on top, but he doesn't see those who are down below. Rashi Roe Es HaGavoa, alright, he says the Karvo, who does he want to bring near unto him and to make friends with? Well, Hishtade Limo, right? The Choshe B'Yenov, in other words, who is the one who is important in his eyes? Another one who is Gobo. He wants to associate only with the big shots, okay? Kimo, right, absolutely. As it is written, Kivikura B'Ata Einov, Bereshi Sa, Ra'isi Avoseichem. The pasuk in Hosea is Kavikuro Bateinor Bereshiso Roisias Avosechem. I saw your ancestors, even like a fig tree at its very beginning. So he says, I saw your ancestors. Nosati Einai. I set my eyes the Korvom Lchababam to. Bring them near and to show them how much love I have for them. But of course, you have to realize he's not really quoting. I mean, he's not really giving a drash on Hosea what the pasuk says. What he's doing is to say quite the opposite, namely that who does a Gavoa want to associate with? Who does he see only? So of course, the answer is he sees only those who are in the same social status as he is. Okay?
But the
explanation
right next to it is very good.
Yeah. Aval Midas HaKadosh Baruch Hu ain't okay. Rebbeinu Shalom is not that way. Hu Gavoa, Rebbeinu Shalom is high on high, and yet nevertheless, V'roes HaShofo. He sees the lowly. Shenemar Kiram Hashem, the Shafol Yireh, namely, because the Lord is on high, and yet the Shafol Yireh, he sees those who are low, who are lowly. Okay? Yeah. Omer Rav Chisda, another teaching. Rav Chisda said, the Temoa Marukba, not say it was Marukba, he says, Kol Odom, every person, Sheyesh Bo Gassus HaRuach, who has within him this haughtiness of spirit, Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Rebbeinu Shalom says, Ein ani v'hu yecholin lodur ba'olam. It says the two of us cannot live together in the same world, the same universe. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, Meloshni b'seisa re'ehu, Osei atzmis, which means literally, the person who bears slander secretly against his neighbor, in other words, he's always talking Lashon Hara against the other person, right? Also, Atzmis, I will destroy that person. Rebbeinu Shalom does not like a person to go around and talk slanderously about somebody behind that other person's back. And the pasuk continues and says, Giva Einayim Urechav Levav, Oso Lavuchal. Meaning, the one who literally is haughty in the eyes. In other words, he looks only on high, doesn't see what's low, what's below him, right? Or Rechav Levav, his heart is simply, full of the spirit of haughtiness. So also Lo'achal, the Rebbeinu Shalom says, I cannot stand him. And then he says, Al Tikrei Oso, don't read Oso, Elo Ito. but rather with him. In other words, I can't get along with him, right? Ito luchal. Iko de masnei lo, there are those, however, that take this pasuk and say, this is not a pasuk which deals so much with the, the gasei haruach, right? With the, the haughty in the heart and in the spirit and so on, but rather it's teaching us on the sapri loshon hara, concerning those who go around and gossip, right? They spread loshon hara. Shenemar meloshon b'sisra yehu oso atzmis. Okay, all right. Let's take a look and see what Rashi has to say. Ve'iko demas didlo b'sapri loshon hara. He says b'shum reisho dekra. Because he says the beginning of the pasuk is Beloshim Esesrayu, so that therefore there are those who interpret the pasuk rather for the Lashon Hara rather than the aspect of Gassi Sabra. But there's nothing wrong with interpreting both ends. Okay. Amar Rabbi Alexandri. Alexandri said, Kol Olam Sheyesh Bo Gassi Saruach, any person who has this haughtiness of spirit, Apilu Ruach Kimo Ukhata, he says, even a small wind, literally, can trouble him, can destroy him. Shenema, as the pasuk says, again, Yeshayo, it says, V'hor shayim kayom nigrash, that the wicked are like a sea which is literally stirred up or troubled. Okay? V'mayom, just as a sea, sheyesh bo kama revias ruach, which, kama revias, which has so many measures of water. These, remember, we said, it's a quarter of a log, right? Mm-hmm. But the sea has how much? Endless, right? Endless quantities of water. And nevertheless, what happens? Ruach kimo echato, even a slight wind can cause the water to become troubled, to become stirred up. So Adam, a human being, she'im bo elo revi'is achas, who has only one revi'is. They determined that, if you have bloodletting or something like that, as long as you still have it, or let's say you're an accident victim or something like that, as long as you still have a reveal of blood left in your system, there is the possibility of life. Okay? Yeah. So that's what it means when it says reveal. So, Adam she'ein bo ela reveal, even if he has nothing more than that, reveal achatz, alachatz kama v'chapa. All the more so that, if this reveals that is, if he has gases of ruach, then the wind can come and come trouble him. Okay, again Rashi, ruach kibo echarto. He says puranus kalo torato mabarato. Even a light punishment will cause him to become upset and to perish. The horishayim, who are the rishayim. In the pasuk where Sama Shoyim Kayom Nigrash, right, he says they are the Gatsi Haruach. They are the ones who are filled with haughtiness. The Kore the Le'el, because the Psukim just before it, Mishtoi, Mishfolim, Uvidit Koyim. Among those, it talks about those who are, who are low, who are humble in spirit, right? Because the pasuk says, Achayos Ruach Shefolim, right? And in other words, God is going to give life, is going to revive those who are humble in spirit and so on. So that therefore, and then after that says, Horshoim Kayob Nigrash, so that must refer to those who are the opposite of the Shefolim Vinit Koyim. Okay? Kilo Li Elom Oriv. Then the Pasuk says, Kilo Li Elom Oriv. So then, we read this in the Haftorah for Yom Kippur. This particular group of psukim that we have. God says, I will not always have to contend. All right? Kiloli Elamo Rivi says, if Osam Shefolim Ba'avon Bitzo. I will not, in other words, punish those who are humble, whereas, those who sin because of, robbing their fellow men and so on, the Rachov Ra'isim Erpo'ehu, right? I see his ways, and I heal him, says the Rebbeinu Shalem, concerning, those who are righteous and who are humble. And then what does the Pasuk say? It says, Borei Nifsa Fasayim, right? That God, who creates the fruit of the lips, literally, And what does he say? He says, Shalom, Shalom, L'rachov, V'la Korov, right? Urufase, right, and I will heal him, okay? Avol HaRishoyim, but then the next box it says, but the Rishoyim, Sheinan Shfonim, and Nitkoyim, right, who are not humble, and who are not, lowly, so Kayom Nigrash, they will be like the troubled sea, Kayom Amigoresh, like the sea, which, says Rashi, drives away, Mashlich Refesh, Petit, Lisfasov Sivivak, and it causes, all kinds of, flotsam and jetsam and everything else, to come, right, debris and so on, to come to the shores, okay? Then the business about, kamer v'yis, right? The sea, it says, has so many lugei mayim, right? So many quantities of water. Let's say quarts, gallons, etc., etc., of water, right? Onu roim, he says, nevertheless, we see sheruach kimo, that even a slight wind, ucharto, right? Ucheres meimav, it stirs up the waters, it troubles the waters, literally. So, odom sheimbo ele revis achas, a human being who has only one revis, he says, shebo revis dam, whom is kayim, that if he has even this minimum of revis dam, he can live. Shiur zeh, he says, this quantity is halach la Moshe Sinai. This is an oral tradition going back, to Moshe Rabbeinu of Mount Sinai. I mean, this, when it comes to halach la Moshe Sinai, we don't argue with this, okay? Sheravi is dam meis metame be'ohel. That, the blood, if there's even a ravi is dam of a mess, then it's going to cause tumor. If it's covered, if you're in a place where you have a covering, of course, this deals with the whole concept of tumah v'tahara, okay, that a mess causes those who are in the same room with him, under the same roof with him, right, to become tummy. Why? Ibnei shehi nefesh, because this amount already is the nefesh. Right, the Karina Bay, and we have a part that says, "I'll call Nafshis Meis Liyavo," that the Kohen is not to come, for example, in with Nafshos any Meis, as long as there is Nefesh in the Meis. In other words, if he has Revius Dom in him when he dies, so the Kohen is not to come into contact with that, because the Kohen would then become Tomei. Okay, so we see that this is then the minimum amount of Dom, of the blood which enables a human being to survive, okay? And of course, again, the comparison is there in order to show that just as the sea is troubled by the slightest wind, so the human being,
awesome,
right, the Rebbeinu Shel Olam can cause punishment to come, even the light punishment, as Rashi said a moment ago, can cause him, to be disturbed and to become frightened and out of his wits. Okay. No, the Gemara now continues. We're still on the subject of Gasus of Ruach, but nevertheless, now we're going to see that nevertheless, a tiny bit of it maybe is not so bad. This is what the Gemara is now going to say. Okay? After we've spoken about all the horrors, the bad, you have to be humble, Shpal Ruach, you have to be lowly in spirit and so on, and not to be stuck up in the air or something like that, right? So, nevertheless, now we learn that, Omer Rav Chiya Barashi, Omer Rav, he says, Talmid Chocham, Zorish Yehebo Echod Mishmonu Bishmit. Says a Talmud Chacham has to have a tiny bit of Gasus HaRuach in him. Why? He has to have pride. Let's see what Rashi has to say. He literally has to have one part of eight in eight. By which I mean there's 1/64th, I assume, that you have to have. Okay? 1/64th of your character should be made of that. Okay. Let's take a look at the Rashi. Echod Bishmeina Bishminis, he says, Mishkal cotton too, he says, is only a very tiny amount. V'hayni uchlo. This is what they call in another Gemara, they call it uchlo. Alright, doesn't matter. What is the Mechloi? It says Kloimer. In other words, it says Zorif Sheyie Bo Me'at Gadol. He has to have just a little bit haughtiness in him if he's a Talmud Chacham. Why? Because Shelo Yehu Kalei Harosh Mistolelin Bo. Because he has to be able to stand up against those who are literally Kalei Harosh, in other words, light-headed people, in other words, people who are, you know, mockers with no background and so on and so forth, but they're always criticizing things. So, right, that he shouldn't let them roll over him, Mistolelin Bo. Okay? Because if he has a slight amount, you know, of Gatzus and Ruach, he has a slight amount of Gaba within him, then he can force them to accept what his to accept his words as, you know, as being you know, the right way of life. Otherwise, you know, if they have absolutely no respect for him, then no matter what he says, it's going to make any a difference to them. Okay.
It's also played out apikorsim, perhaps.
Yeah, the apikorsim, but it doesn't necessarily have to be apikorsim. Look, they're a balabatim.
Yes, you cannot always interpret those who go for head, you walk without head covering, despite, you know, we don't believe it, we don't need it. That's the general understanding.
Well, I mean, there are different things, but how to interpret that apikorsim. Yeah. But the point is, he's not even talking necessarily about the apikorsim. Talking about, let's say, people in the community who are so puffed up with their own importance that they don't want to listen to a rabbi. The rabbi is Zayungeshnek or something like that, as they would say. You know,
that's from the last, just from
right.
The Me'evayon.
Yeah,
Apikarism is something entirely different now.
Yeah, and Apikarism is somebody who denies, you know, the teachings of Yiddishkeit, okay.
Because usually when you see Seim or, you know, Hebel or Rosh Hebel or Clay.
Yeah, but,
Clay or Rosh, sometimes.
All right, no, it's Kale. Kale, in other words, those who are light-headed.
Kale,
right.
Kale,
in other words, they don't take seriously Yiddishkeit. This is what he means by Kale or Rosh. Right.
Sometimes it's...
Yeah, they don't take it seriously. And as a result, the Rav tells them, you have to do this, you have to do that. They laugh and they say, who cares? I do what I want to, you see. So he has to have enough personality to be able to convince others that this is the right way and this is what they should be doing. Okay? So, based upon this last teaching, Omer Avunu Bereidu Rav Yehoshua says that this tiny bit of Gavo that the Talmud Chacham should have, he says, it should be like a crown to him, even as the Sasim L'Shibolta we're talking about before, namely the tassel on the top of the ear of grain. Okay? Omar Rava, Rava said as follows, he says, Bishamta the Isbe, Ubishamta the Lesbe. He says, Gaval, he says, a person who has Gaiva, he deserves to be excommunicated, whether he has it or he doesn't have it. Makes no difference.
He's talking about being haughty.
He's talking about the Talmud Chacham, right. Because obviously, why should he be excommunicated if he has it? Because Gatz's Ruach is bad. But at the same time, if he doesn't have it, then they're not going to listen to him and they won't obey what he has to say. Okay? All right, Rashi again. First of all, he says, Ma'atrele, right, that it crowns him Kisasa Lishabot. You see that second of the big lines down below. It says, Gatsus Mu'at Noem, the whole Genisla. Okay? A little bit, he says, is fine and is fitting to him, to whom? To the Talmud Chacham. Ma'atarto, and also it crowns him Kisasa Ma'ateres Lishabot. It's like the tassel which crowns the Shibbolis. So then along comes over and he says, Bishamto de Ispe, he deserves excommunication if he has Gatsus Ruach, but a Bishamto de Lespe, also if he doesn't have it, Gatsus Purto, he should have a little. Why? Lefi She'en B'nei Yiro, Yirayim Imenu, because the people in this town will not be in awe of him, right? The Ein Bo Koach LeHochicha, and as a result, he will not have the strength in order to rebuke them if he sees them doing something wrong. So he's going to be an unhappy person either way, okay? But obviously, the first idea is that even though it's bad, but still a little bit is necessary in order to enforce the teachings of Yiddishkeit. Okay. Omer Rab Nachman bar Yitzchak. He disagrees. He says lo mino velo miksasa. He says shouldn't have it, and not even a little bit of it. Rashi says lo mimeno, right? Velo miksasa. He says lo yachpotz adam lo bechula velo miksasa. He says a man should not desire either all of it or even some of it. In other words, some of the gatzus aruch or gaiva. The Mi Zutar says, because after all, let's take a look. A person who is humble, right? Mi Zutar, who is a person who is lowly, who is, junior. The Dichsiv Bey, it's written concerning him, Tovasan Shem called Valei, right? That it is an abomination unto the Lord, whoever is haughty in spirit. So that means even a little bit he shouldn't have. So obviously he disagrees with the previous statement that was said that the Talmud Chacham should have a Echa b'shmoyna b'shminis. Okay. No, obviously this is not a case of halacha necessarily. It's a case of the relationship between the Rav and his community. He should never be so swollen headed, that he looks down upon everybody else. He has to see those who are humble, because the Rebbeinu Shalom loves those who are humble, right? But at the same time, he has to have enough authority in order to be able to enforce his teachings. Okay. Omar Chizkiah. Chizkiah said, "Ein tfilosei shel odom nishmas el minkei meisim nivo kibosa." Says, the prayer of a human being will not be heard by the Rebbeinu Shalom unless he makes his heart like bosar, like flesh.
Right.
What do you mean like flesh? So again, we have to come to Rashi. Kibosar, he says, shehu rach, in other words, flesh is soft, tender. Below ke'evin, and not, he should have a heart like stone, shehu kosher, which is hard-hearted. Okay? In other words, person's prayers will be accepted by the Rebbeinu Shalom if it comes from a tender heart and not from a heart that's hard as stone. Okay. Now, how does he derive that? So he says, Shanamar. Of course, this is very appropriate for Rosh Chodesh tonight, right? It says, V'hoyo midei chodesh b'chodesho, right? Midei Shabbos b'shabbato is the rest of the pasuk, right? That every Rosh Chodesh and every Shabbos, he says, Yovoi kol botzor, all human beings, all flesh living will come, nishtachavos, in order to pray. So in other words, kol botzor implies that it's a person who has a lev botzor, a heart, right, which is soft as flesh, and not a lev item. By the way, the comparison of lev botzor and lev ha'evan, this we find actually in Yecheskel, where he says, I will remove the lev ho'evan b'psarchem, right? The nesati lechem lev basar. And then he says, v'esruchi etein b'kivachem. So in other words, the Rebbeinu Shalom himself will enable us to remove the hard-heartedness that we have and become soft, become humble, and, be able to accept, the Rebbeinu Shalom's teachings, and then he will be able to pour his spirit into us. pardon me. Omar Adzera, Bosor, as far as flesh it's written, he says, Kesiv Bey Ben Yirpa. Odom Lo Kesiv Bey Ben Yirpa. This is actually taken from the Parsha Tazria. In Tazria they speak about Tzaras, about the leprosy. Of course, a lot of people say that the leprosy of the Bible is not the leprosy that we call, Hodgkin's disease or something like that, whatever it is. Yeah. But at any rate, that's besides the point. The point is that, we traditionally have interpreted the word Tzaras as leprosy. All right. And it says, Adam, right, Kiyadai, Basar, Venirpa. In other words, a human being, if he has Basar, then he will be healed. It doesn't say Adam Nirpa, but it says, Kiyadai, Basar, Nirpa. So this is what he's saying over there. That Basar, Ksibay, Venirpa, that when it comes to the word Basar, there we find that he can be healed. But Adam, like Ksibay, Venirpa. Omar Rabbi Yochanan, so Rabbi Yochanan comes with a play on words. He says, you know what the word Adam means? He says, you know, the word Adam is made up of what? It's made up of Aleph, Dalet, and Mem, right? So what does that stand for? Aleph stands for Afer. In other words, he should consider himself like ashes, right? Dumb, that's the Dalet. That he's a creature of flesh and blood, right? And what does the Mem stand for? So he says, Mora, that he has a gall, you know, the gallstone, not the gallstones, the, what do you call it?
Gallbladder.
Gallbladder, right, thank you very much, okay? In other words, a human being is a human being with all kinds of faults, okay? But this is the other. Basar. What does basar? Well, we said before, you know, that the word basar means you should have a heart of basar and so on. Well, these are the qualities of basar. It says, you know, base shin resh, what does that stand for? It says, base stands for busha, right? In other words, you should feel the sense of shame. Basar, right?
Yeah.
It says samach, but actually, you know, that in the Lashon of the Gemara, very often samach and sin are interchanged, okay? So it says that stands for srucha. In other words, that at times, you know, that the human being also has a certain foulness in him, right? And the resh stands for, he says, rima, the fact that worms are going to consume him after, you know, his death. So in other words, the idea of basar is to remember that you should have humility. You should remember that the day will come when your body will putrefy, because, you know, nobody is going to live forever, right? And that the worms will eat you. And that will, of course, give you the understanding, you know, that you should live a life of Torah, mitzvahs, and masim tovim, and so on and so forth.
Exactly.
Right. So in other words, you know, the more flesh that you have in your life, the more that the worms are going to have a feast afterwards, okay? All right, again, we'll take a look at the bottom over here at the Rashi. Okay, yes. All right. First of all, it says Basar Ksiv Bevanirpa, right? By Basar it's written that he'll be healed. It's written Uvasar, right? The flesh, Kiyebe O Bobi Oro Shechin, right? If it has you know, leprosy, Shechin in it, the Nirpa, it can be healed, okay? But Adam Kiyebe O Besoro, but another pasuk says, a man, if he has in the skin of his flesh Negat Soroas, right? Kiyebe Adam, Lo Kasiv. No, these places it doesn't say v'nirpa, only with the first case. Lefi darkecha ato lomeid, so accordingly you learn, it says, shemi shehu rach bi'onov kibosor, that a person who is soft and humble, even as flesh is, so korov lehisraf es b'yisurin, he will be healed from the torments, the punishment that will come upon him. Right. Aval mi shehu kosher ka'adomo, person who is as hard as the ground, so ein refu elamakosav, for him there is no refu for his wounds. Then it says Adam, it says lomo nikrosh mei Adam, why is Adam called Adam? So he gives a drash. He says shehu efer dam mora, right, as we said, stands for that man is made of dust, of blood, and of a gallbladder. Kolomer, kulo hevel. In other words, in the final analysis, his life becomes vanity. So lechach al yiskoeh. Therefore, he should not, you know, be proud. Okay. Mora he lechluchis mora. So he says, what does it mean by mora? Actually, it doesn't mean, says Rashi, the gallbladder, but it means instead, you know, the liquid that comes out, what we would call, you know, the gall. Hayotze min hamrira shebekoved, which comes out from, you know, the bitterness or the gallbladder connected to the liver. Umisgaberes ba'odam. And it can take over a person's life. Obviously, you know, you have gallbladder problems. It makes you right. Hakol lefi chadoshim v'shinui ha'itim. Everything he says according to the months and according to the changing of times. Ulefi ha'machol. And also, of course, I guess by that he means according to the changes in the seasons. This is what a human being is subject to. And even he's subject also to the hamalchol shoichel, right? Also he's subject to what food it is that he eats, right? The al yodeho, because as a result of these different things, boyin chaloyim and the goyim and machoibas, right? We have all kinds of illnesses and all kinds of afflictions that result. In other words, a human being's life is never stable. It's always subject to all kinds of fluctuations. And of course we know seasons, you have a flu season, right? And others, right, it may be accidents and so on and so forth. All right. Yesh shekorim bedivrei harofim, he says, merira shchera. Says there are those who call or who read literally in the treatises that doctors write, they read about merira shchera. Literally, a black liver. But what does it mean? This is what in Hebrew is called melancholy. This is the Hebrew term. Morishchayr we speak about. Okay? Morishchayr. That you have, you know, you suffer from melancholy.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I mean, in Greek, you know, it's the same thing. Melan is from the Greek word which means black. And kali is, you know, like the word colic and so on and so forth. In other words, the liver. Okay? The bladder. The gallbladder. Right. Okay? So and then how about the other one, you know, namely what is basa? So far we've had the following interpretation, right? We said it was busha, smucha, and rima, which Rashi doesn't comment on right now. But iko de amre, there are those who say that we should read not smucha, but we should read sha'ol. Why? This is bishin again. Because the letter itself actually is a shin. All right, we read it as a sin, but there is a shin. Of course, what a sheol, sheol is the grave. So in other words, these are the things that a person should remember in his lifetime, that in the final analysis he's going to have to give a din of cheshbon to the Rebbeinu Shalom. In sheol, and of course, this makom sheol beso, says Rashi at the bottom. In other words, eventually he's going to have to lie in the kever, and that'll be his home. Okay. Omer Rav Ashi. Ravashi said, "Kol olam sheyesh bo gasus haruach l'sof nifchas." Says any person who has haughtiness within him, in the end, is going to be decreased. Literally, okay. What is nifchas? He says, "Mismayit bechashivuso." In other words, he's become less important. Okay. V'naaseh poches banoshim, and we held less in esteem by human beings. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, v'lasa eis v'lasa pachas. Again, this is a connection with leprosy, but v'lasa eis means literally raising up, right? V'lasa pachas, and what adheres. V'lasa eis v'lasa pachas, Rashi. Well, all right, let's finish the first line over there. The ein se'eis, he says, el lo shen gavaya, right? The word se'eis refers to haughtiness, so to speak, you know, shenemar, v'yalkol he'horim horamim, v'yalkol ha'gvavos ha'nisavos, right? That, you know, over all the high mountains and all the hills that are raised up, nisavos, and therefore you see sa'es is from the same word, raising up, v'yain sapachas, and as far as the word sapachas, it says, the meaning of it is elot tfila. It means only that it is joined to something else. It's attached to something. Shenemar, you know, we use the word tofil in the sense you speak about ikar, the tofil. In other words, Ikar is the important thing, and Tafel is only that which is secondary in nature. Why? Because it's like it hangs on to something else. From this, incidentally, in modern Hebrew, when they wanted to create a word for a parasite, so they made the word Tafel, and Tafelus is parasitism, and so on.
Ikar is also used for, right?
Pardon me?
Ikar,
yeah, an important thing. Literally means the roof.
The Ikar is out.
Right, yeah. Shenemar, Sapcheni no elachas hakahunos lechol paslechem. This is a story that we find, about David HaMelech over there. He says, cause me, he says, to become joined to one of the kohunos so that I can have at least bread to eat. Something. Actually, it's in reference to the sons of Eli. The sons of Eli. Remember that they were bad people and so on. So he says the time will come when the household of Eli will be punished so that the kahanim, descended from them, will be looking for a handout of bread. They'll be looking, where they can find a place where to work. So Sapachas means, let me join. Let me become attached to something. All right. So Rashi, he says, Al Yidei Sheminasei Atzmo, by virtue of the fact that he literally raises himself, Boli Dei Sapachas. And then he's going to achieve that of being Sapachas She'ino Ikar. In other words, he will not be considered as being an important person in his own right. Ela Nispach B'Totel, but only they're going to be, unimportant. Okay. And then he quotes, Tefela. He says, Dover Sheinu Chosha Biatzmo, right? Something he defines as something that's not important by itself. Elo Mitpal Ba'achir, but it has to be joined to others in order to have something. Sapcheni Noah, he says, Otpeni Noah. The Nevuah Pesayli, he says, let me be joined. And he's talking about the household of Eli. He says, "Amid kohanim gedolim achirim." In other words, the Bnei Shalom says, "I'll appoint other kohanim gedolim, not from the house of Eli." They will remove the kohanim who are your descendants from their greatness, right? The historical, and they will have to mevakesh mehem le'osvam kol tamei tzvah. They have to beg that that they could join one of them, Elachat Hakamunos, right? The Achat Binamishmorosunos would let them join one of the groups of Kahanim so that they can have at least a possibility. Okay.
Well, I think we'll stop at this particular point.
Right. And we'll continue then from line 5 in Yetz Hashem next week. Okay?
Line 5.
Going.
Yeah, I see
the
good thing. Okay. See, tonight is, I believe, the 29th of January.
That's correct.
And we are now continuing from where we left off last time on Nafhei Omid Beis Besechasot. Okay. We're now on the 1, 2, 3, 4, the fifth line, okay? Fifth line. We've been talking
for the last session or two,
right, about the importance of the Rebbeinu Shalom does not like people who are gasei ruach, in other words, people who are haughty and want to lord it over everybody else, and that they act like a bunch of boors and so on, all these things. And so, now, naturally, what's the opposite of gasei ruach? So the answer is, Amar Yeshua ben Levi says, Bo re'e, says, come and see how great are those who are lowly in spirit before the HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Shebeshoah shebeis hamikdash kayom, during the days when the Beis HaMikdash was still in existence, he says, Adam akir oilo, tzucha oilo biyodah. That if a person, for example, would offer as a sacrifice an oilo, a burnt offering, then he gets the reward for that particular burnt offering that he offered. Okay? Mincha, let's say that he gave a meal offering, then in that case, so mincha biyode, he gets the reward for that particular mincha. Avol mishadate shpola, but a person who is humble in spirit, humble in mind, literally,
It's as if he sacrificed every single type of sacrifice. He gets the reward for it. Shenehemar is a pasuk which says, Zivcha Yalakim Ruach Nishmora, the sacrifices of the Lord are a broken spirit. In other words, a broken spirit, the humility and so on, or if you feel, you know, contrition in your heart, whatever it may be, this is like sacrificing sacrifices. Okay? Take a look at the Rashi in a moment. Below all, not only that, he says, Elishain Tfilot Satan in Nessus. Another thing is that his prayer will not be despised by the Rabbeinu Shalom, not be rejected. Shememar, as the Pasuk continues and it says, Leib Nishpor Venitke, Elikin Le Sivza. A broken heart and a humble heart of God you will not despise. The Yomai Rabbi Shimon Levi, Kol Hatsom or Chosu Boilam Hazer, we'll see in a minute that actually they're going to suggest that it should be read Kol Hashom or Chosu. So, of course, what's the difference between Som and Shom? The answer is that Som means literally put. So we call it Som or Chosu Boilam Hazer. In other words, whoever is careful as to what his paths are in this world, he's, you know, attentive to those things. So Zoichev Reb Bishuvasu Shalakodish Baruch Hu, he will be worthy and to see the salvation of the Hakadosh Baruch Hu. Shenei Amar, as the pasuk says, the son derech arenu the yesh alikim. It says the person who you know is careful with the way of life that he chooses for himself, then I will show unto him the salvation of God. And he says al tikre. With some, don't read the pasuk as with some, Elo the Shom Dera, but rather there's one who, and of course, what is Shom? Shom, you know, means to you continue the, you estimate the value of something. So, in other words, for Shom Dera means that you value, you estimate what would be the right choice and what would be the wrong choice. We'll take a look at the Rashi over here. Yeah, where it says Schar Oilo Biyoda, you see that over there? So it says Velo Schar Korban Acher. In other words, if he sacrificed the days when the Beis HaMikdash was in existence and he sacrificed it, then he would get the reward for that particular sacrifice, but not for any other sacrifice. But see, if the pasuk says, Zivchei, because I'm looking, the print is a little small. So it says Zivchei. What is Zivchei? Zivchei already implies plural. Okay, so in other words, Kol Hatzvachim Bimashma. And then he says, Hatzom or Chaisov. So he says, the meaning of it is Mechashet Hefseid Mitzvah Keneged Tzachor. Of course, the quotation from Zivchei Yovos, which says that you calculate what is the loss that would be incurred by performing this mitzvah in contrast to the reward that you're going to get. So in other words, Hashem is the way he would read it, that in other words he estimates, he values how much would be the reward that he gets as compared to how much he's put out by the fact that he has to take the trouble to perform the mitzvah. Hi. How you doing? Okay. What's good with you?
Hanging in there.
Good.
Better, right? Oh, it's 6:01, huh?
Yeah. Okay. All right. So now we go back again to finally Sefer itself. Until now we've had a bit of Agadata, and now we go back again to the problem of the Sefer.
What's the Gaf?
Huh?
Gaf.
We're on Daf Hei on the days. We'll take a look for a moment at the Mishnah itself at the very beginning of the chapter, the beginning of the Perek, because this is what they're now going to discuss. Okay, the Mishnah began by saying Hamakane the Yishtei, right, that the person becomes, we've interpreted it, in other words, he sees that his wife is misbehaving by being too friendly with somebody, and he gives a warning, right? So Rabbi Eliezer, according to Rabbi Eliezer,
So he has to give her warning. This is how we now translate the word Bekane. He gives her official warning, not to be with another man, okay? But a certain man, not to be secluded with him. So it's on the basis of two witnesses who saw that she was misbehaving herself, okay? And then if she defies his warning, and she secludes herself, and as a result, so then he causes her to drink the Mayim HaMa'orim, of course, which has to be in the base of Mikdash, and this is Al-Piyed Echad. One witness would be sufficient to say that he noticed that she had secluded herself in spite of the warning that had already been given to her. Okay? Rabbi Yeshua Emer, Rabbi Yeshua says, Mekani Lo Pishtayim, he says that the warning has to be given to her on the basis of the fact that two witnesses saw her, Umashkal Pishtayim. But the daughter to cause her to drink, to the Mayim HaMa'orim, he needs two witnesses. This is how the Mishnah went to begin with. And then the Mishnah continues and says, Kesav Mekaneva. How does he go about this procedure of being Mekaneva? In other words, of warning her of his suspicions and, to warn her not to continue to behave the way that she has been reported is not behaving herself. So, the procedure is, Omer lo b'pnei shnayim, he has to say to her in the presence of two witnesses, Al tadabri mishplegi, don't speak with so-and-so. Now, the divro imo, what happens if she defies him and she speaks to this man? So we saw that adayin hi muteres b'beiso, muteres levo b'tuna. So we see that if the violation is only that she speaks to this man, that he warned her that he does not want her to have anything to do with, then in that particular case, she is still permitted unto him, literally to a household, but it means that she's permitted to him. In other words, as Rashi explains, that he's permitted to continue to have marital relations with her, okay? And also, if he happens to be a Kohen, then in Muteres Lechol B'Truma, she is also permitted to eat truma. In other words, speech alone is nothing in this particular case. Now what happens, Nechne Soyimu Rebesa Seser, Bishoa Soyimu Kidei Truma, what if, however, she entered together with this man against whom she had been warned into a secret rendezvous, and she would stay there long enough in order to commit an act of adultery? Of course, we define how much that is. Remember, everybody had his own interpretation, like running around the tree and so on and so forth, okay? But at any rate, the idea is in the final analysis how long, if we remember, this is the conclusion we came to, that each one really was based on his own experience as to how long it would take to consummate the sexual act. So in that particular case, then she is prohibited to eat truma. And then the last statement is the in mace. First of all, I left out a line. First of all, she can no longer have any marital relations with him. And also, she's not permitted to eat truma if her husband is a kohen. The in mace, and what happens if the husband dies before, obviously, she has had an opportunity, to go and have the Mayim HaMa'orim, then in that the case, she's a widow now, but what happens if she never had any children? And in that particular case, Choletzes, V'loy Misyabetz, she has to receive Chalitza from the brother-in-law, but she's not allowed to be taken by the brother-in-law in marriage as a Yevam. Okay? So this is what the Mishnah said. So now, what we have over here on Daf Hey Omer Beis is to go back into the discussion of this particular Mishnah. Alright. And the Gemara continues by saying, Ha Gufa Kasha. It says, look, we got a Kasha right now in the text itself in the Mishnah. There seems to be a contradiction over here.
Excuse me, what did you say if she doesn't have a children?
Well, a woman who has no children, okay, then in that particular case,
if her husband has a brother.
Oh yeah. Oh, she does.
Right. So
with a
shoe. Right.
Chalitza.
So in right. Of course, today would be chalitza, but in those days there was also a choice of yibam, wherein the brother-in-law actually married.
Right.
Okay. So.
But can't they do that today? The brother-in-law can marry.
We don't have yibam. No, we don't practice it. Chalitza, yes. Yibam, no. Okay. So, at any rate, here the law is that if he is suspicious of her, he's given a warning and everything else, and then he died before actually taking her to the Beis HaMikdash. So, in that particular case, the brother-in-law would have to give her chalitza in order to release her so that she could go and marry somebody else. But he himself would be prohibited from marrying her as the yavam. As the brother-in-law, okay? Yeah. All right. So the Gemara says, "How good for Kashi?" It says, "It's a Kashi." It says, "Why?" Amrit. First, you say, "Omar lo b'tnei shnayim al tadavim ish pleni zeh." Right. He says to her, in the presence of two witnesses, says, "Don't talk with this so and so." So Alma, we see if that's the case. He says that dibur stirahu. Says, then in that case, speech is tantamount to an actual act of, action on her part, being, hidden with the man, being secluded. Bahadur Tani. And then we learned a little further, and it says, Dibraimo, if she spoke to him, then Adayim Uteresta Beso Uteresta Chulitruba. She is still permitted to live with him as husband and wife. And also, she's permitted to eat truma. So, Alma, from this, we see the dibalo klum. That to just say, he talks to her and he says, don't do this, this is nothing. It has to be followed up with further action.
That's like a warning.
Right. It's a warning. Exactly. So, Umar Abaye says, Hachi Kohama, says, let's interpret the text of the Mishnah in the following method. Says, Al Tadabri B'Dibron, if he says to her, don't talk to the guy, and she spoke to the guy. Al Tadabri B'Nistoro, he says to her, don't talk to the guy, and she went into seclusion with the other guy. Okay? In other words, he didn't warn her against what? Not to go into seclusion. Okay? The only one that just don't talk to him, okay? So, the law club. In other words, they didn't say anything else, right? So, it doesn't yet have any effect. Alta Sasri, what if he says to her, don't go into seclusion with this man, don't have a rendezvous with this man? But all that she did is to talk to the guy. So in that case, what is the situation? So it's Adayim Muteres Lebe, so Muteres Lebe the Truma. Then she's still permitted to live with him as husband and wife, and she's also permitted to eat Truma if he's a kohen. But, Nichnisa Imay Lebe Sasesa, Bishah HaSokete Truma, if she entered with this man into, a rendezvous area, and she remained long enough in order to commit a violation, then in that case, and in that particular case, she could no longer live together with her husband, and also she would be cut off from the privilege of eating truma if he is a kohen. All right, time to take a look at Rashi again. Okay. Yeah. Omar lo b'pnei shnayim al tadabri mishpain, right? But Ibrahim lo shelo b'yichud, and she spoke to him. But what is Rashi at over here? Shelo b'yichud, meaning that she didn't speak to him in seclusion. In other words, if she spoke to this guy in some public area where people could see, what she's doing. Let's say she saw him in the street, in the market, wherever it may, and she talked to him. So that in itself does not make her prohibited. Okay, but the very fact that Rashi adds the word Shalom B'Yichud, this already has a significance. Okay, Adayim Uteres L'Beiso, and as Rashi explains, he says the Shamish Beiso. In other words, to have intercourse with her husband, right? He says, L'shein Tashmishum. He says that this is an expression which implies having marital relations, okay. But what happens if she disregards everything else? In that case, Asura Lebeisa, Asura Lechol Bishulam, right? Ad Shetishta, until she drinks. Again, what is Rashi adding over here? Of course, you have to say what he's adding over here is that from the moment, you know, that she goes into seclusion with that guy, in spite of all the warnings that he's given her, not only not to talk to him, but also not to be in seclusion with him, then in that case, she is now prohibited from eating trumot, her husband is a kain, and she's certainly prohibited from having any marital relations with him, until what? Until she undergoes the ordeal of the soita of having to drink of the mayim hamahorim. Okay? Ulakamam, and further on in the Gemara it says, the parsha Kishem Shamayim Boitkim, it's the name of the chapter, so it says, Yalif, we learn that from the Nitma'ah, the Nitma'ah Shalosh Piyamim, the word the Nitma'ah is found in the case of the Sota three times. Echad Labal, which indicates, first of all, that she is prohibited now from having any marital relations with her husband. The Echad Laboel, but she's also prohibited from having any marital relations with the person, you know, her lover. The Ech of the Truma. And the third, Nitba'ah, means that she's now unclean when it comes to the matter of eating Truma. Okay. Now,
the unique section of Rashi, huh? Isn't it?
Pardon me?
It's a unique section of Rashi, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
It's really unique.
Right.
Does this happen anywhere else? A completely different text of Rashi.
Right.
When a section of Mishnah is worth on it as well.
Yeah, correct.
And
you don't have to look at each and every word.
Can make
why does he add one or two words?
Okay.
The answer is we have to understand, you know, why, what motivates
somebody. Somebody's written a book on this.
Yeah. I think somebody is trying to write a book. but not on the Gemara. I think it's on the Chumash that you know they're trying to figure out why does Rashi say this and that, and why does Rashi? Of course, I mean this is a tradition that goes way, way back.
Well,
obviously, it's Sifsei Chachamim, for example, or even the Ramban, you know. But certainly, Sifsei Chachamim, they go into that in a great detail. All right, continuing with the Rashi. Yeah. The Yimei is Palei Bonim, right? And if the husband died without any children, Ad Shalei Yishkor, and this of course would be before he actually had a drink of the Mayim HaMa'orin, then in that case, Choletzes, Velo Misyabet. So she gets Chalitza, but she cannot be married to the brother-in-law. Okay? And he says, the Gemara will first time, and Gemara will explain why not. Okay. So now they say, Gufo Kasha. It's a Kasha, this whole of the Mishnah, because Amrit gets in the Kani law. First he said, how does he go about the procedure of doing it? It's a lot of Nishtai and so on. So, because Salkodate, therefore you might think, says Rashi, Omalor, that he said there are the following things. It's a Hainu Pei Rusha. In other words, this is the explanation of the Kates and the Kani law. In other words, the Mishnah is explaining how does he go about it. So on Allah of Nishnayim, he said to her in the presence of two and so the Ashmin and the Zehu HaKinui. And from this we learn what is Kinui. Kinui, in other words, is that he tells her in the presence, you know, of two witnesses, that you know, Al-Tisosri and so on. Al-Tidabri, don't speak. That's the first thing he said. Don't talk to so and so, all right? So Alma, if this is the case, we will assume that Dibur means Sisirah, Adon Sirah. Even if she would talk to him, he says, in the marketplace, in other words, where it's open, you know, everybody can see her talking to the guy against whom she's been warned, Sirah Choshevla, right? So we could consider this as being like Sirah. So Mdekaroma Zeha Kinui, inasmuch as it says this is Kinui. So the Elav, the Sirahu, because if it is not Stira, below Mitzvah, Bo, and she is not going to become prohibited unto him, then my kinui you got. So what kind of kinui is that? For Lomali, the master God, then why does he have to give any warning? Simply say, don't talk. Is that it? Just talking along? So then it says, well, the Tonian, then again we learn, it says, Tehi Avral Hasbara Asai, that if she violated his warning, the Dibroimo, right, and she talked to the guy, Muteras to Vesa, she still is permitted to live with her husband, his husband and wife. So, Omar Abaye, that's why Abaye came along and he said, you know, Hakik Omar, and he said that we have to understand the mission in the following way. Okay? Namely, Omar Law, he said to Lafet, he says, Lafe Rusha, the Ketzad. This is not, he says, the explanation of what Ketzad and the Kanima. But rather we learn two things in the Mishnah. The Hochika Omar, this is what he said. First of all, Omar Lo, he said to her, Al Tidabri, right, don't talk to him, Vinistor. And what did she do? She went into seclusion with the guy. Oh, Dibro. Or, the other possibility is that she spoke to the guy, Afal Pisha Obral Kinuyo, Eitzel Dibro. Even though she violated his warning, the kinui over here, by talking to him. Oh, im dibra imo, achar kinui, or if she spoke to him after she had already been warned, achar kinui gomor, the alsis sasri, even if he said to her, not only don't talk to the guy, but don't be secluded with him, this is the kinui gomor, as Rashi now calls it over here, and still, right? So, at any rate, so at I am the achas mishtei elu muteres levala. If she violated only one of these two, namely, either she violated the fact that what? That she spoke to him, right? Or she violated the fact that was nistara. That's the way we'd have to understand it at this point, right? Muteras Lavala. But, above Obral Kinuyoi, Esel Sisira, but if he had already warned her that you're not allowed to be secluded with him, Gagon Shomalor Altisosri, Benichnaso Yibodabesa Sesa, then in that case, of course, then, as we said, she is prohibited to her husband, and she is prohibited to the Bovil, and she's prohibited from eating Tuma. Alright. So, this is how Abaye understands the Mishnah right now. In other words, he's amplifying the explanation of the Mishnah as to how the process of kinui has to be. In order for kinui to be effective, it has to be, as we said before, in the presence of witnesses, don't talk to someone, right? And then, again, al tisosri. It has to be specific that you're not allowed to go into seclusion and so on. And we have to have witnesses to the fact that she actually went into Sisera, you know, into seclusion, in spite of the husband's warning. Okay?
Abaye is actually very counterintuitive.
Pardon me?
Abaye is very counterintuitive.
Yeah.
An alternative, I think the way I would try to formulate what would be the intuitive interpretation of the Mishnah is that it's coming up with the broadest application of kinui and saying no matter how he warns her, even if he warns her to avoid the most trivial contact,
right,
he thereby indicates his own suspicions.
Absolutely.
So that with the slightest, he warns her against the most trivial interaction.
Right.
And as a consequence, even though he doesn't warn her about more grave infractions,
right,
just intimating his suspicions, then sets the stage for the second. That's the intuitive understanding.
There's no question about that. Your interpretation is 100% right.
Now, so Abaye comes along, and in response, so what's wrong with the kasha? How do we answer the kasha? How would we answer the Gemara's kasha to support the intuitive explanation?
Yeah.
Is it really oxymoronic? Is it really contradictory?
No, it's not really contradictory, because the Bible not could say that the Ketzad actually explains the procedure.
Mm-hmm.
And the procedure has to be step A, step B, and so on. And if she violates step A, it's nothing yet. It's only when she violates step A and step B that, in that particular case, she would be, prohibited to her husband, and prohibited from eating truma, and then she would have to go through the ordeal of the Mayim HaMa'orim in order to prove her innocence.
What if there isn't any warning whatsoever? She does something.
The warning is when he tells her.
What if there is no warning? What if there is no warning?
Oh, there is nothing. Then he can't proceed with that.
Can't proceed, even if she's secluded with the guy?
No.
There has to be a warning.
Of course. Look, if he doesn't like her to the extent that he doesn't want to live with her anymore, he has the option of divorcing her. Then in that particular case, he divorces her and then he give her, her ksuba and so on, whatever he owes her financially. So. Right. Obviously, if...
instead of drinking the water.
Yeah.
She wouldn't be liable for that anyway, without
right.
the warning.
Right. If he gave her a gift, and that's it. I mean, it's not going to be any...
He would be satisfied with that, maybe in that case, because he couldn't do anything else.
Right.
He's stuck.
Yeah.
Okay,
how you doing, George? Okay? Good. Rabbi Gemara? Yeah. All right. So now, remember then that the Mishnah continued by saying the inmates, that if the husband died, and we said he died prior to the fact, that he had taken her to the Beis HaMikdash and caused her to drink of the Mayim HaMa'orim, then in that case we said, Chaletzes, she gets Chalitza, but below it's Yabemis. She does not come into the, she cannot be married by the brother-in-law. So, the Gemara wants to know, am I? Why? Tis Yabem? Nami Yavumi. Why? What did she do that's so terrible? Inasmuch as he died and she never had to undergo the ordeal of Mayim HaMa'orim, and in that case, let the Yogam, let the brother-in-law marry her if he feels like it, instead of giving her Chalitza, right? So why do they say Chalitza will only have Emes? So they have to give an answer for that. So Amar Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef says, Amar Kva. This is based upon an interpretation of the Pasuk. Pasuk says, in reference to a man who decides to divorce his wife, okay? So the Pasuk says over there, the yot or the beso, she leaves his home, in other words, she leaves the house of the original husband, right? The whole call, and she goes, v'hoyesol the yishacher, and she can be married to another man, okay? And what is Rav Yosef's point over here? He says, take that pasuk and understand it as le'ish acher. Yes, she can marry somebody else, but not below the yavan. But she cannot marry the yavan, the brother-in-law. So, Amalei Abaye. So Abaye said to him, Elo miyato, this is the case, he says, Chalitza nami leisibwey. If your point is that she doesn't, she cannot, she has nothing to do, she she has no obligation, so to speak, to marry the Yovam, then in that case, she shouldn't have any obligation either to have Chalitza. In other words, she should go scot-free without either alternative, okay? This is the way the argument is going between Rabbi Yosef and Abaye. Let's take a look at the Rashi again to see that he agrees. Okay, the Yotz on the Beisa. Okay, you see it in the Rashi. In this text, at least, that the Rashi is put in a big. the start of the quotation is put in big. Okay, so the Yotz on the Beisa. He says the El Minei before it. In other words, in the Torah itself, it happens to be in Parsha Kisei. If you find it, so Ksiv, it's written over there. Ki Motzo Bo Ervas Tova. He found in her something, literally some act of lewdness or something like that. But I mean, I'm really giving too strong an interpretation, because the way we understand it, Erbas Dova, there are different interpretations as to what exactly it means.
Taka, one interpretation says that if, you know, he found that she had actually committed adultery, then in that case, what is it? He's obligated to divorce her, okay? But according to, for example, Rabbi Akiva, he takes it in a much looser sense. He says, in Higdira Tavshila, which means that she burnt the pot, she spoiled the food every time, she never gave him decent food, he has a right to divorce her too. See? In other words, if the two of them cannot get together, there's no harmony at home. And so in that particular case, Erbas Dovah means simply that there's a lack of harmony at home, and therefore he can divorce his wife if it doesn't work out. Okay? But notice the language itself. It says, Lo Tzibor Erbas Dovah. Now, what are we dealing with in the case of the Sota? We're dealing also in a case where what? He doesn't like her actions, right? He suspects her of infidelity. So, that would very well qualify as a matter of Erbas Dovah, alright? So we follow so far. If it's written, Beyotzen Beiso, right? She leaves his house, right? And then afterwards, she goes and she is married to another man. So, Rav Yosef says, Lomali Lemichtav, what do I have to write it for? Okay? E namashriye lansuva yede get krisus. If the pasuk is there simply to give permission that she should get married by a get, call it a get krisus, because, you know, this is it's written in the Torah that what is the procedure of the get? Procedure is that the chosav law sefer krisus. He has to write to her literally a sefer, a bill, you know, of course it's a document, right? Of krisus. What is krisus? Means krisus that the marriage is cut off at that particular point. Okay? Marriage is severed, it's cut off. So therefore the term that Rashi is using over here is get creases. In other words, he writes the bill of divorce, which cuts off the marriage. Okay? So, he says, if to tell me that there is such a thing as permission to divorce by giving a bill of, by giving a get, then Lichtor, let it write, the yotz on the beisoy, behoyos or the ish. So, she leaves his home, in other words, she leaves the home of the husband who divorced her, and she becomes the wife of a man. Lomali lemichtav la'acher, why do they have to write le'ish acher? What do they need that for? So, elo lemiute, the reason being that this is in order to exclude yevama, the yevama. Okay, so exclude a woman who is a yevama. In the case of Hecho de lo Gersho,
or maybe Yavma or Yavam.
Well, you could say either Yevama, her brother-in-law, okay. Or you could take it in the sense of the Yevama itself,
she herself, right?
Yeah. Hecho de lo Gersho, right? Where he did not the. Baal, right, but the husband did not divorce her. Achar Shemotzebo Evasdova, right, after he found something that he didn't like in her conduct. The Hochi Mishtami Kroi. And so this is how we can understand the Psukim, this is how they fit together, namely, Kimotzebo Evasdova, Yigorshena Besefer Karisis, right? That if he finds in her some Evasdova, then in that case, what does he do? He divorces her by giving her a sefer krisus. And then what happens? Beyotze mebeisoy, and then she leaves his home. Kolomer, the chol tzad, she takes a mebeisoy, and no matter which way she leaves the household of her original husband, right? Bein al yedei gevushin, whether it is by receiving a bill of divorce, bein al yedei nisah, or if the husband dies, in which case the marriage obviously comes to an end also, right? So in bos linose the ish acher tinose. So if she wants to marry, she can marry anybody else, but below the yavam, but she cannot marry the Yavam. She'eino acher eitzel nesuin shel zu. Because he is not an acher. He is not a strange party, so to speak. You understand? When it comes to her marriage with the husband. She'mekoyach nesui rishoin inis kekeslo. Because as a result of the marriage of the first husband, then she is skuka. In other words, she has a zika, as we would say, she has a bond to the yavam. Okay? So, in other words, what we're saying over here is really the fact that under normal circumstances, if a woman's husband passes away, right, and she has not had a child, then in that case, she could either be chaylatzis or misyabetz. Of course, we're talking, you know, where the husband has a brother. Obviously, if he has no brother, then automatically the whole deal is off, period. Okay? But if he has a brother, then the brother does have an obligation, according to the law of the Torah, to either take her as the yavam in marriage or to give her chalitza. Okay? But here, in the case of the woman who is suspected of being a soito, because of the fact that Botsabo Ervas Dovod is something that's not right, so therefore the Hoyasur the Ish Acher. She belongs, if she wants to get married, she can marry any other person who is not related to her through marriage, but not to the brother in law. Right. Take it one step further. The truth of the matter is that normally a woman cannot marry her husband's brother. Ever. Okay? However, the Torah made an exception in this particular case where the woman was childless and so on, because it was concerned about the fact that the dead man, the dead husband, you know, would be honored by having a child born which would carry on his name. Okay? So that, this is why the Torah made an exception. But where there is no reason to make an exception, then the Isser, of course, holds.
Is this a reflection of trying to hold together the tribes, making the tribes keeping the same size and so forth?
No. Forget about the tribal business. I mean, we're talking about how does the Torah itself look upon the entire deal, you see.
This law goes back to the time of the tribes.
Yeah, but even so, I mean, we're not talking about tribes at this time. The only time that the tribes enter in the whole business, this was the business with the B'nai Salafchlan.
Yeah, right.
I mean,
there was a question,
you know, as to whether property would belong, you know, let's say transferred from tribe A to tribe B or something. And so, with the B'nai Salafchlan, they were told that the rule was that they would have to marry people of their own tribe in order that it shouldn't be. But then we learned subsequently in the Gemara and Tainus, if you remember, is it still working, I hope? I hope it's not a washout. We learned in Gemara Tainus subsequently that Chamisha Asa Ba'av, the 15th day of Av, was made into a Yantav. Remember it says, Lohoi Yom Taimum Yisrael, there were never such holidays so joyous to the people of Israel is Yom Kippur and Chamisha Asa Ba'av, alright? And why Chamisha Asa Ba'av? So they give a whole set of things that happened. As for example, that on that day, in the 40th year of wandering, they knew there were no more deaths, and so they knew that, you know, that would be, and then in connection with Beis HaMikdash. But one of the reasons that they gave is the fact that this celebrated the time when people could intermarry into various tribes. In other words, the original prohibition that had existed from the time of the Nesbel Abchav was no longer in effect. So this was one of the reasons why they celebrated that particular event. Okay?
This wasn't the shot, this was afterwards, right?
This was what?
Was this during the